Senate will come to order. Chief Clerk will call the roll.
Roll call for Monday, February 9th. Anderson.
Here.
Bebout.
Here.
Burns.
Here.
Case.
Here.
Coe.
Here.
Cooper.
Here.
DeCaria.
Here.
Dockstader.
Here.
Esquibel.
Here.
Geis.
Here.
Hastert.
Here.
Honeycutt.
Here.
Jennings.
Here.
Johnson.
Here.
Landon.
Here.
Larson.
Here.
Martin.
Here.
Massey.
Here.
Meyer.
Excused.
Excused. Nicholas.
Here.
Perkins.
Here.
Peterson.
Here.
Ross.
Here.
Schiffer.
Here.
Scott.
Here.
Sessions. Townsend.
Excused.
Basie.
Here.
Bonflatern.
Here.
President Hines.
Here.
28 present, 2 excused.
Prayer by Pastor Nelson.
Well, I would invite you to pray with me this morning. Lord of all creation, you are a great and awesome God who is beyond our comprehension, but yet in the midst of your greatness, you choose to reveal yourself to us through your creation. Just a simple look around tells us this world is not a random accident, but there is a creator behind the creation. And so, Lord, this morning, as these men and women gather together to present and debate and to vote for and against legislation, I pray, Lord, that they would be wise and discerning legislators, and that they, in their decisions, would bless the people of this land and of this state and even of this nation. In Jesus' name I pray. Amen.
Please join me in the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Reading correction and approval of the journal. Will the reading clerk please read the journal committee report?
Mr. President, your journal committee reports that the journal of February the 6th, 2009 has been read and recommends that it be approved. Senator Dockstader, Chairman.
Are there any objections? There being none, the report is adopted. Doctor of the day is John Mellon, MD from here in Cheyenne. Nurse for the day, Mary Beth Stephens, Wyoming State Board of Nursing. Mary Beth, I'm glad to have you here. Thought for the day. Due to the current financial restraint, the light at the end of the tunnel will be turned off until further notice. Okay. House bills on first reading. House Bill 204, first reading of the bill.
House Bill number 204, sponsored by Representative Miller, excise tax collection and acts relating to taxation and revenue. Pass the House on third reading in an amended form, I-60.
House Bill 204 have been referred to committee number 3, Revenue. House Bill 174, first reading of the bill.
House Bill number 174, sponsored by Representative Yagi, Provisional Opportunity Hathaway Scholarship, and act relating to the Hathaway Student Scholarship Program. Pass the House on third reading in an amended form. Ayes 51, noes 9.
House Bill 174 have been referred to Committee Number 4, Education. House Bill 130, first reading of the bill.
House Bill Number 130, sponsored by Representative Illoway, State Parks Matching Account, an act relating to state parks and cultural resources. Pass the House on third reading, ayes 60.
House Bill 130 have been referred to Committee Number 6, Travel. House Bill 42, first reading of the bill.
House House Bill number 42, sponsored by Representative Dave Zwanitzer, Burial Arrangements, an act relating to burials and cremation. Pass the House on third reading, ayes 60.
House Bill number 42 have been referred to Committee number 10, Labor. House Bill 54, first reading of the bill.
House Bill number 54, sponsored by the Labor Committee, Workers' Compensation Amendments, an act relating to the Workers' Compensation Act. Pass the House on third reading, ayes 60.
House Bill 54 have been referred to Committee number 10, Labor. House Bill 127, first reading of the bill.
House Bill number 127, sponsored by the Management Council. Obsolete Laws, General Revisions, an act relating to the general revision of laws. Pass the House in an amended form, ayes 59, noes 1.
House Bill 127 have been referred to Committee number 12, Rules. Reports from standing committees.
February the 9th, 2009, Mr. President, your committee number one, Judiciary, to whom was referred House Bill 165, engrossed, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Burns, DeCarrier, Perkins, Ross, and Sessions, Senator Ross, Chairman. February the 9th, 2009, Mr. President, your committee number one, Judiciary, to whom was referred House Bill 150, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Burns, DeCarrier, Perkins, Ross, and Sessions, Senator Ross, Chairman.
Bills on second reading. House Bill 87, second reading of the bill.
Wolf brucellosis testing.
That's a Senate file.
Excuse me. Senate file. 87, that was the second reading of the Senate file. There is an amendment. Would the reading clerk please read in the amendment?
Senate File 87, Second Reading Amendment Number 1, page 2, line 10.
Senator Jennings.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move Second Reading Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 87. Ladies and gentlemen, the questions that were asked during the Committee of the Whole by the senator back there from Sheridan, he was right. In my discussions prior to this bill and the indications that the feds would enter into some kind of a memorandum of understanding, once I sent them an email and asked them, they kind of changed their minds, so we'll change the bill. All we're doing, Mr. President, is on page 2, line 10, we're taking out directed and replacing that with authorized, and then in line 11, we're taking out and authorized to enter into a memorandum of understanding and just change that to an understanding. So it would read, the Game and Fish Commission is authorized to negotiate an understanding with the United States Fish and Wildlife Service that will facilitate the collection of samples from wolves. So it doesn't mandate them to have anything in writing. It just is, they can have their handshake, and the Fed said, here's your wolf or here's your blood. And I'd ask for your favorable vote on this amendment.
Are you ready for the question? Question being, second reading amendment number 1 to Senate File 87, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Amendment passed. Excuse me. Senator Massey.
Thank you, Mr. President. May I have privilege at the floor?
You may.
Thank you. There's a group, I think, up behind us here that has come to see us. I wanted to have a chance to introduce them. They're the People First of Wyoming, a group that of folks with developmental disabilities who are also advocates for their own needs. Wondering if they could stand and if we could take a second to welcome them to the Senate chamber.
Here, here.
Welcome to the Senate chamber. We hope you enjoy your visit today. Senate File 87, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objections, it is so ordered. Senate File 99, second reading of the Senate file.
Senate File number 99, sponsored by Career and Technical Training Grants.
There are amendments. Would you read in the amendment, please?
Senate File 99, second reading amendment number 1, page 2, line 11.
Senator Bebout.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move second reading amendment number 1 to Senate File 99. Ladies and gentlemen, if you look at page 2 of this bill under the approved career and technical training provider means, there's a definition of those that can do this service. And what this amendment does, Mr. President, it adds Board of Cooperative Educational Services, as we all call BOCES. I think it just gives them, puts them into the mix and lets them be part of that group of people that could, if this bill moves forward, be able to have access to the funds. I would ask for your support.
Are you ready for the question on the amendment? Question being second reading number 1 to Senate File 99. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Amendment passed. There is a second reading amendment. Reading clerk, please read it in.
Senate File number 99, second reading amendment number 2, page 2, line 23.
Senator Von Flederman.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move second reading amendment number 2 to Senate File 99. And I think most of you will remember on Friday afternoon I had a lot of issues with this bill. So the lesson learned is if you want to shoot off your mouth, you better come back with some good thoughts on how you can amend something. And so working over the weekend with a good sponsor, we came up with the following. So if you follow along with me on page 2, line 23, you'll find that we have delete in manual insert on the workforce needs of the state as identified by the department. So in that particular paragraph, we took out the words in manual or practical activities, trying not to limit it to somebody trying to define what manual or practical activities are and really putting it down to what the needs of the state are. And that's followed through in a lot of the community college issues we've worked with, that it's what the state needs if we're going to use state dollars. It's what has been identified as needs of the state. And then page 2, line 24, delete the rest of that and go to page 3, line 4. After tool, insert pre-approved by the department. My particular issue with this was that there was no approval of somebody's multi-level career readiness pre-instructional assessment tool. There was no level. It could be if you can count to 10, you qualify for this program. So this says the Department of Workforce Services, will pre-approve their particular assessment tool. And that was page 3, page 4 on line 7 after workforce. You delete the balance of the line. Page 4, line 8, delete workforce needs. And so after workforce. So the sentence now ends with training grants to develop or enhance the skill of Wyoming workforce, period. Workforce, and then you go to line 8, based on current, projected, or emerging labor shortages in Wyoming economy. What I took out was in support employers in meeting their workforce needs. This is an individual applies for these grants. It's not an employer. So I wanted to take out support employers. I can see employers coming to workforce service and saying, I need to do this, and this is the project I want, and I should fit in within these grants, and I'll line the people up, and they can sign their name. No, it's the individual coming to us and saying, here's a training program I want to get into, and I do the application. So I remove the word employers. And then you go down to page 4, line 23 after article. You delete the balance of that line. Page 4, line 8, or page 4, line 24, you delete. So it ends with, we took out their language that tried to narrow this down to that we wouldn't be preempting or supplanting other funds that we're already paying for training. What we're trying to do is increase the amount of people trained, not just supplant private and public funds that are already being paid and they have another avenue to get state money. We want to make sure we train more people. So after you remove those on page 4, you go to page 4 after line 24, and you would insert and renumber, the following shall not be reimbursed under this article. Services eligible to be paid for by another public or private program, services historically paid for by another program or from another source, and that continuing education training in an applicant's current trade. Once again, if they need CTEs, there's probably a system in or they need continuing ed, there's probably a system in place that pays for that. What we're saying, we want people that are starting over, going into a new trade, changing the direction of their life, we hope, in a better manner. And so this is not going to pay for continuing ed within the trade you're in. It's not going to supplant private funds that are already being paid. There's a training center in Casper that it's about 6 cents a working hour. Every hour an employee works for contractors that belong to that, he pays 6 cents into a fund. That collects a few $100,000, and they train future employees for those contractors. We don't want to change that. Now, if they want to increase their training and the number of people trained, that's exactly what this is supposed to do. So that'll be addressed here in a little bit. But anyway, it is to not supplant money that's already out there, but to increase the number of people being trained. Page 5, line 12, after demonstrated, insert 12 months. So the trainee has demonstrated Wyoming residency as determined, page 5, insert 12 months. Page 5, line 13, delete and insert residence as defined in Wyoming Statute 21-102, little a, little triple X. And those are our voting residencies, residency requirements, which allow a person to be here 12 continuous, or they need to be here 12 months prior to applying, but it also allows for somebody stepping out of the state for a week or two. It says your intentions. That's what a lot of this is. Your intention is to live in Wyoming. You may leave for a month to go on a job, or if you are actually taking some other educational, taking an training in some other manner, maybe go into a college on the border where you're actually or using a college in, say, Colorado. You still don't lose your Wyoming residency if your intention is to live in Wyoming. But what it does say is that somebody from Colorado who's going to University of Wyoming doesn't become a resident of the state just for the fact they're going to university. So this is right out of the election statutes. So 12 months and per the voting requirements. Page 5, line 14, you would delete. Page 5, line 19. After diploma, and this was a question from the good senator from Casper who asked if whose GED, whose equivalency diploma are we going to recognize? And so this says, in accordance with rules adopted by the Department of Education pursuant to Wyoming Statute 2116-1308B and little Romanet 4. So we specified whose, and so the department can say if somebody has a GED from another state, if it's equivalent to what we asked for, then fine, they're good. But that can be done through rules and regulations. What it's saying is that we won't accept one that is completely off base from what we would ask our own residents to do. Page 5, line 22, delete specified, insert as pre-approved by the department. This is once again that readiness score test, so it goes back to an earlier amendment that we made where the department has pre-approved those readiness test scores and said whatever level that particular organization needs to obtain, or the people in that organization need
you
to obtain.
About 30 seconds.
Okay, page 6, delete 5, insert 2. And what that does is it takes it down from 5 years, equivalent of 5 years of eligibility for the money. It takes it down to 2. The next one takes it from 6 years to get it done. You get it down to 4 years. And page 6, after commence, delete the balance on the program start date. Once again, this thing said that you would get paid should you, and Mr. President, may I take part of my second time and finish this amendment?
Yes, you may.
Thank you, Mr. President. So on page 6, line 10, after commence, delete balance line. In this original bill, it said your eligibility started when we paid the first bill. So if you took a year's worth of courses in some training facility and then they billed us, then you started your eligibility from that point on. What this does is say the day you started, or the day you set on your application, whichever is the earliest, is the day your eligibility starts. So that tightened that up a little bit. Page 6, line 11, you delete. Page 6, 12, you delete through this article. So that line now says eligibility should be deemed to commence, and then you put on the program start date, as I said earlier, page 8, lines 1 through 3. One of these amendments where you just say, believe me, let's vote on it, but there's a lot here. Page 8, lines 1 through 3 are deleted. And in there, we have inserted Romanet 6, is not eligible to hold license or is otherwise disqualified to be employed in the occupation for which training is sought. So what this says, instead of saying that somebody with a felony is not allowed to go in there, it's saying if you apply to be trained in something that for whatever reason, your parole, probation, whatever is still haunting you, prevents you from actually going in that trade, then you're not eligible. Then we add a Romanet 7 that says, has been the recipient of more than 2 semesters of the Hathaway Scholarship during the 5-year period before the date of the application. That was the question that was brought up. Could somebody go through the Hathaway for 4 years and decide, oh, I don't really want, my English degree isn't really going to do me much, so now I'll start this program. This says you have a 5-year window there that you are not eligible to be in this program. Page 8, lines 8 through 17, we deleted. And that is the area that said for 2-year period, they broke it up into various amounts. For 2-year period after high school, you got this much, and for after that, you got this much. And we wrote in there, an eligible trainee under the age of 21 may receive up to the equivalent of 50% of the Hathaway Performance Scholarship Award pursuant to Wyoming Statute, blah, blah. And an eligible trainee age 21 or older may receive up to the equivalent of 100% of the Hathaway Performance Scholarship. So we said immediately after school, all the way to 21, we do not want to incentivize kids to leave school, think they go out and work, and if they don't like it, they can fall back into this and get somewhat equivalent money of what they would have if they'd stuck with the success curriculum and made it through high school. So for that first 5 years, you get 50%. It's not a whole lot of money per semester. If you're 21 or older and you're a re-entry into this, a non-traditional, you get 100% of it. So page 9, line 5, delete and shall insert, grantee shall enter. You can read that in yourself. I'm going to run out of time before I complete this. Page 9, line 12, after grant, insert, and shall not be less than the length of the grantee's training. This is another issue I had. There was nothing in here that said how long they would have to stay within the state and what defined what was working in Wyoming. This is different. We're talking a myriad of trades being sent out into the state, not somebody that's licensed locally, licensed by the state, or licensed by the feds, which would be doctors and nurses and dentists and people we've dealt with before. So I felt we needed to tighten that up and say, what is the definition of working in the state for this group of people? And so the definition for the training length and shall not be less than the length of the grantee's training program or for 2 years, whichever is less. And for purposes of this subsection, work in Wyoming means that the grantee is employed for at least 80% of the grantee's paid work hours in the trade for which the grant was awarded. This would allow them to go out to do a job outside the borders of this state for a week or two or three and still not be not complying with their grant, and I ask for the question, and I stand for questions. Thank you, Mr. President.
Senator Schiffer.
Mr. President, and this is a technical point. I think it can be corrected up at the front desk. On page 1, line 36, there's a reference, and this is to the eligible voter statutes, but I'm not sure that's a complete reference. Under 21-102, I think you need to add one, and I think it could be done up there. I just wanted to point that out.
Thank you. Senator Perkins.
Thank you. I think the site is 22-1-102A, Romanet 30. Just look that up. And then I also want to thank the good senator from Gillette for messing around with someone else's bill and more extensive than I did in his earlier, so I just want to appreciate him for that.
Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. President, I certainly support this amendment. I think it's gone a long way to taking care of this bill. My question would relate to the last provision on the working in Wyoming. I haven't been able to fully track that in yet, but it's my observation that in a number of the trades, people will be based out of Wyoming and they'll be assigned to work in Montana on a job or work in South Dakota or someplace like that, I'd still be based out of Wyoming, and some of the time be working in Wyoming and some of the time be working over the border as our contractors get work in other states, or their company has particular needs in other states. With this amendment, do we adequately take care of that situation? Because I think it's important, Mr. President, given the mobility in some of the construction trades and some of the trades that do maintenance work on things like mines and whatnot, or work servicing heavy equipment, that there be a good deal of flexibility for somebody whose work may take them outside Wyoming for 2, 3, 4 months.
Senator Hastert.
Thank you, Mr. President. And first of all, I want to thank the good senator from Gillette for coming in on Sunday. And we had a working group. There was five of us total that sat down and did some rework on this. And we did have a representative from the organization that represents the construction industry with us. And he was very comfortable with that language and said that would adequately take care of the concerns that we had.
Senator Vasey.
Yeah, Mr. President, the language about the GED is fine, but that GED is a national norm test. If you take it in East Rutherford, New Jersey, or East L.A., or Recluse, Wyoming, it's the same test. And they're all checked off by the Department of... Yeah, I mean, the language is fine, but it's a little overkill here.
Senator Massey.
Thank you, Mr. President. And I think the question from the senator from Natrona County, I don't know if it was answered or not, but it seems like it's flexible in general enough with regard to the provisions to deal with the situation that he was talking about and describing. I don't see anywhere where it says a person has to physically be in Wyoming for that entire period of time. So I do think that it's fine, and I did track it in. And I also wish to commend the two sponsors and co-sponsors of this amendment for their hard work on I think, improving the bill considerably.
Are you ready for the question? Question is Senate second reading, amendment number 2 to Senate file 99. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Motion passed. Senate file 99 having been read 2 separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objections, it is so ordered. Bills on third reading and final passage. Mr. Majority Floor Leader, do we have a consent list?
Yes, Mr. President, we do have a third reading consent list. The third reading consent list is as follows. Senate File 66, Medicaid Foot Care. Senate File 89, Fallen Heroes Scholarships. Senate File 93, Oral Health Initiative. Senate File 119, Public Transportation Funding. Senate File 134, Embossed License Plates. Senate File 144, Property Tax Assessment Rules. And Senate File 145, Hospital and Healthcare Districts Services to Providers.
The consent list is Senate File 66, Medicaid Foot Care. Senate File 89, Fallen Heroes Scholarships. Senate File 93, Oral Health Initiative. Senate File 119, Public Transportation Funding. Senate File 134, Embossed License Plates. Senate File 144, Property Tax Assessment Rules. And Senate File 145, Hospital and Healthcare Districts Services to Providers. Would anyone like any of these bills removed from the list? Having read 3 separate times, the question is, shall these bills pass the Senate? Senate File 66, Senate File 89, Senate File 93, Senate File 119, Senate File 134, Senate File 144, and Senate File 145. The Chief Clerk will call the roll.
Anderson.
Aye.
Bebout.
Aye.
Burns.
Aye.
Case.
Aye.
Coe.
Coe. Aye.
Cooper.
Aye.
DeCaria.
Aye.
Dockstader.
Aye.
Esquibel.
Aye.
Geis.
Aye.
Hastert.
Aye.
Honeycutt.
Aye.
Jennings.
Aye.
Johnson.
Aye.
Landon.
Aye.
Larson.
Aye.
Martin.
Aye.
Massey.
Aye.
Meyer.
Aye.
Nicholas.
Aye.
Perkins. Peterson,
aye.
Ross,
aye.
Schiffer,
aye.
Scott,
aye.
Sessions,
aye.
Townsend excused, Vasey,
aye.
Von Flatern,
aye.
President Hines.
Aye.
On the consent list, 29 ayes, 1 excused. Senate File 66, are there any changes? Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. Senate File 66, 29 ayes, 1 excused. Senate File 89, are there any changes? Perkins, aye to no. Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. Senate File 89, 28 ayes, 1 no, 1 excused. Senate File 93, are there any changes? Burns, aye to no. Perkins, aye to no. Geis, aye to no. Nicholas, aye to no. Co, aye to no.
Hines, aye to no.
President Hines, aye to no.
Anderson, aye to no.
Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. Senate File 93, 22 ayes, 7 noes, 1 excused. Senate File 119, are there any changes? Case, aye to no. Honeycutt, aye to no. Schiffer, aye to no. Anderson, aye to no. Nicholas, aye to no. Larson, aye to no. Vasey, aye to no. Ross, aye to no. Perkins, aye to no. Martin, aye to no. Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. Senate File 119. 19 ayes, 10 noes, 1 excused. Senate File 134, are there any changes?
Johnson, aye to no.
Geis, aye to no. Bebout, aye to no. Anderson, aye to no. Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. Senate File 134, 25 ayes, 4 noes, 1 excused. Senate File 144, are there any changes? Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. Senate File 144, 29 ayes, 1 excused. Senate File 145, are there any changes? Case, aye to no. Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. Senate File 145, 28 ayes, 1 no, 1 excused.
Having received the affirmative vote of the majority of the members elected to the Senate, Senate File 66, Senate File 89, Senate File 93, Senate File 119, Senate File 134, Senate File 144, and Senate File 145 have passed the Senate. Senate File 39, third reading of the Senate file.
Senate File number 39, Child Health Insurance Program, sponsored by Senator Massey, an act relating to child health and insurance premiums being enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
There is an amendment. Would the reading clerk please read it in?
Senate File number 39, third reading amendment number 1. Delete the B-Bout second reading amendment.
Senator Massey.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move third reading amendment number 1 to Senate File 39. The first thing, Mr. President, I'd like to do is divide the amendment. And division number 1 would be line 4. And then the rest of it would be division number 2.
All right, Senator Massey.
Thank you, Mr. President. On the first division, which is line number 4, or page 4, line 22, is a technical correction. In Committee of the Whole, we added some subsections that dealt with the requirement for copayments and as well as premium assistance. And we changed some of the sections in the bill around, and Section C became Section D. And we forgot to note that change in another part of the bill. And this just simply brings forward a technical correction and would ask the body's approval for this part of the amendment.
Question is, shall the Division 1 of third reading amendment number 1 to Senate File 39 be approved? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. That motion passed. Division 2, Senator Massey.
Thank you, Mr. President. Decided to bring this discussion forward to continue the conversation we had on second reading. Wanted to emphasize up front that what's remaining in the bill, the population from 200 to 250%, is really substantial and certainly an important part of the bill. And so if we decide to defeat the rest of this amendment and keep in place the deletion from the second reading amendment, we still have a very important bill in front of us and would certainly urge everybody's approval of that. The conversation that we had on the second reading amendment was a concern about crowd out. And that is, even though the 251 to 300% population, there's about 3,000 children estimated not to have insurance at all right now and have not had it for some time. And that particular part of the bill would reach out and eventually register, they estimate, a little bit over 1,700 of them. But there was a concern about some unintended consequences of going up that high on the salary scale. Some folks may be encouraged to drop their employer insurance and go on to kid care. And therefore, we would just be recovering children that already have insurance. So as a result, Mr. President, I brought this amendment forward, which indicates that in addition to the one-month waiting period, for any child that is from a family with income from 251 to 300, that if they are eligible to be covered under an employer's policy, they would not be eligible for kid care. They don't have to be registered. They don't have to be a part of that employer's policy. Just the fact that they're eligible would make them ineligible for the kid care. After over the weekend, Mr. President, I reviewed a report put out by our Wyoming Department of Employment Research and Planning called the Wyoming Benefits Survey of 2008, and I distributed a few pages from that to everybody, and it should be in your pile of paper on top of your desk. In particular, I took a look at employers that are providing health care benefits, especially family health care benefits, today. On page 5 of the report, or really the second page in your packet, I underlined the dependent health insurance. And taking a look at that, as far as full-time and part-time employees in the state of Wyoming, of the 149,000 employees who are offered dependent health insurance, 3,000 are offered from employees from businesses that hire 1 to 4 employees, 6,000 from 5 to 9. By far, the largest number of employees offered dependent health care coverage are from those big businesses that hire 50 or more people. Mr. President, over on page 10, a similar statistic broken down into part-time and full-time. Again, those businesses that hire fewer people are less likely to offer the dependent health insurance, whether they're full-time or part-time. And then on page 12 of the report is a breakdown by industry. And some surprises there as I was looking through it. Some ones that aren't surprised are the construction industry and the leisure and hospitality industry are least likely to offer dependent health care. And also one that falls into that category are professionals and business services, primarily, again, because they're small businesses.
30 seconds.
Thank you, Mr. President. So as a result, what this amendment does and what it's going to benefit are really the small employers in the state of Wyoming. Because they're the ones that are least likely to offer their benefits, yet their employees nevertheless have an income level in which the cost of health care, especially family health care, is definitely a very large part of their income. I ask for the favorable consideration, Mr. President, of this part of the amendment.
Senator Bevout.
Thank you, Mr. President. Excuse me. Thank you, Mr. President. Members of the Senate, and I appreciate my colleague from Albany County. He brought this amendment to me and offered it to me before he brought it to the floor, and I certainly appreciate that. And I think it's better than the way we were. Clearly, it might go a long ways in the crowd-out part of it. But I would ask you to really look at this. And the reality of it is, when you have a small group, and they have a small group insurance policy, typically what happens is that owner of that business, the employer, offers to that employee their group health insurance. And then they have a period of time when they have to sign up. And during that period of time, typically, at least in those that I'm familiar with, they have to pay that premium themselves. So they come in, they get a new job, they're offered this policy. Well, they have a chance, and they make the decision then at that particular time whether they want individual coverage, like employee coverage, or they want their full family or family and children. And so when they make that decision, a lot of them will only take the part of it that says the employee, because they don't understand or know, or they don't have the money, quite frankly, to be able to pay for their family. But if they make that decision early on, then that eliminates them ever doing it again. If they have this available to them, some of them that might make the decision to have their family in there will not. So I think you still have an issue with the eligibility side of it, where people could use this to, in fact, sign up for the program that the state provides rather than signing up for the private sector side of it. And the other thing, Mr. President, is that it's just a policy decision. I happen to think if you're making $45,000 a year for a family of three, that you should be able to take care of that in your priorities for having insurance for your children rather than looking for the state to subsidize you. And that's just a policy decision that I think at $45,000, that's a lot of money. That's a good income. If you look at the state of Wyoming, a lot of people make $45,000. So why should we be subsidizing? Let's them make that decision individually to prioritize how they receive their money rather than saying, okay, now we're going to start paying for your insurance.
Senator Von Fledermann.
Thank you, Mr. President. Standing on and for this amendment, you have to remember in that $45,000, and the good senator from Riverton certainly brings up a good point. There's everybody. You can't write anything if somebody doesn't game the system. But also consider that $45,000 might be coming from two incomes into that one household and counting at that level. And when you start doing that, jobs that pay $20,000, $25,000 each don't generally come with insurance. So there is a segment that needs to be covered, and I think this amendment does it, and it also puts that qualifier in there that you're not, once again, supplanting. I've used that word a lot lately. Insurance that's available to them. So I ask you to vote for this and let the department work it out. Two-income families need this help, too.
Senator Meyer.
Mr. President. Mr. President, I guess when I read this and it just says that shall not be eligible if the child is eligible for coverage under the group health plan offered by an employer, if I look at it from an employer's perspective, I'll just stop offering the group health that has dependent coverage. It won't be the employee's choice. It'll be the employer's choice. I mean, what employer wouldn't do that? What employer wouldn't say, aha, the state's going to take this. Aha, the federal government's going to take this. And I don't have to, it doesn't come out of my pocket. So basically, we're subsidizing a lot of employers. And the question is, do you really want to subsidize employers? And really, isn't there some personal responsibility? $200 a month to $250 a month is all it takes to insure a child if you get basic health insurance. And so, and that's with your Blue Cross Blue Shields or anybody else that's out there. So really, they have to make a decision whether they want to buy two jet skis, a motorcycle, and make payments on a boat and a mobile home, or whether they want to give health insurance to their children. And that's really the decision. Or whether they want to have us pay for it, and so they can keep all the toys. So, you know, at some point in time, we have to say enough socialism is enough socialism.
Further discussion before the sponsor take his second term. Senator Massey.
Thank you, Mr. President, and I certainly appreciate the discussion. To answer a couple of the concerns there, the way the amendment reads is that if someone is eligible to be part of that package the employer offers, they can't get into KidCare, whether they're signed up or not. So if someone does go to work, say somebody already is on KidCare, and they go to work for somebody, and they decide, no, KidCare is a better deal than taking the employer's coverage, and I'm going to stay on KidCare. They may be able to get away with that for a little while, but the department requires everybody to reapply once a year. So at some point, the department will come along and say, no, you're no longer eligible because you can get onto the employer's health care. So if they're eligible at all to be part of the employer's health care for this particular income group, they can't get onto KidCare. With regard to employers dropping their health care, keep in mind the statistics that I just passed out indicate that a vast majority of the folks who work in Wyoming in this particular income group work for large employers. And so if an employer decided to do it, they would not only be doing it for this income group, but for all their employees. Because ERISA and other federal requirements indicate you must offer it to everybody who works for you. So if you drop it just for folks who may be eligible for KidCare, you got to drop it for everybody. And a vast majority work for very large employers that certainly would not do that. And, Mr. President, that has not been the history of this program at all over the last 10 years. And finally, to finish off the discussion, a reminder of some of the statistics I threw out in the last couple of readings. The average health care policy in Wyoming for families right now it runs right around $12,800 a year. The state's policy runs approximately $15,000 a year, and that's the largest group health insurance policy in the state. And finally, those folks who are at 300% of the federal poverty level are paying 19% of their gross income before taxes on health care in the country. And when this program was started, it was only 16% for those at 200%.
Question is, shall division number 2 pass on Senate file 39, third reading amendment number 1 pass the Senate? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
The division passed. Division been called for. All in favor of the amendment stand. Those opposed doesn't need to be. necessary.
11.
Senate File 39. Are you ready for the question? Senate File 39 having been read three separate times, the question is, shall the bill pass? The chief clerk will call the roll.
Anderson?
Aye.
Bebout?
Aye.
Burns?
Aye.
Case?
Aye.
Coe?
Aye.
Cooper?
Aye.
DeCaria?
Aye.
Dockstader?
Aye.
Esquibel?
Aye.
Geis?
Aye.
Hastert?
Aye.
Honeycutt?
Aye.
Jennings?
Aye.
Johnson?
Aye.
Landon?
Aye.
Larson?
Aye.
Martin?
Aye.
Massey?
Aye.
Meyer?
No.
Nicholas?
Aye.
Perkins?
Aye.
Peterson?
Aye.
Ross?
Aye.
Schiffer?
Aye.
Scott?
Aye.
Sessions?
Aye.
Townsend excused. Vasey?
Aye.
Von Flatern?
Aye.
President Hines?
No.
Closing vote? Closing vote closed. 26 ayes, 3 noes, 1 excused.
Senate File 39, having received the affirmative vote of the majority of the members elected to the Senate, Senate File 39 have passed the Senate.
Mr. President.
Senator Geis.
House Bill 46 has an appropriation that needs to be re-referred to the committee number 2.
Without objection, House Bill 46 will be re-referred to Committee Number 2, Appropriation. Senator Von Flatern.
Thank you, Mr. President. House Bill 115, I ask that it be re-referred to Judiciary. It's House Bill 115, DUI Penalties.
Without objections, House Bill 115 will be re-referred to Committee Number 1, Judiciary. Senator Larson.
Thank you, Mr. President. After further review, House Bill number 111 does contain a small appropriation and should be re-referred to Appropriations Committee number 2.
Without objections, House Bill 111 will be re-referred to Committee number 2, Appropriations. Considerations of bills on general file, Mr. Majority Floor Leader, we are that order of business, considerations of bills and general file.
Thank you, Mr. President. Before I make the motion to resolve ourselves in the committee of the whole, I'm going to say we see only 3 Senate files up there. Those will be the final Senate files for this semester, so to speak. Also, as we make the transition into House bills, sometimes it's a little difficult to discern what activity has been performed on the House bills on the other side in regard to the appropriations, and some of those are embedded in there. So you might see occasionally bills that have been put up being re-referred, and I'll take those down. I'll try to catch those. You can work to try to catch those. And also today as we move along, I'm going to put a couple more bills, probably 4 or 5 maybe, at the end without the expectation that we'll get to them today. But it's a heads up for would be Wednesday, I think probably before we're back working the committee the whole with the budget coming out tomorrow. So with that, I would say, Mr. President, I move that the Senate resolve itself into the committee of the whole.
You've heard the motion. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Motion carried. Senator Honeycutt.
The Committee of the Whole will please come to order. The first bill for our consideration is Senate File 129. The reading clerk will please read the bill.
Senate File number 129, sponsored by Senator Sessions, Juvenile Justice Amendments, an act relating to juveniles. It was referred to committee number 10, Labor, Health, and Social Services, that reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass amended. Ayes, Senators Hastert, Honeycutt, Landon, Schiffer, and Scott. Senator Scott, Chairman.
Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, I move in the Committee of the Whole rise and report it do so with a recommendation that Senate File 129 do pass. There was a standing committee amendment. I ask it be read in at this time.
Senate File Number 129, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, that substitute number 1 be substituted for Senate File 129 and that substitute number 1 do pass.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes, Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, I appreciate the reading clerk reading that particular amendment at length. It does help understand what we're doing here. Let me say just a few words before I yield to the sponsor as to what happened. When we got this bill in committee, there was considerable contentious testimony on the subject and quite apparent that there was strong disagreement amongst the people out in the state that are involved in the whole juvenile justice system. And it was apparent to us that we weren't going to resolve the differences, frankly, if we'd have taken a good part of our committee time during the session, we weren't going to resolve those differences. But we did hear one recurring theme, and that was that there was a provision for a single point of entry, and there were some people that weren't exactly happy with how it was done in the bill, but everybody seemed to think that was a good idea. So what we did was we sent them off to work out their differences, the advocates, the governor's office, and the prosecuting and district attorneys, on that particular issue. And what the amendment does is delete everything else in the bill and contain new language on that particular issue, Mr. Chairman, where there did seem to be a general agreement that this was a good thing to do. So what we're doing is we're picking out the part of it that we can think we can pass without extraordinary controversy, that there is pretty good agreement on, and leaving the rest of the bill for another time. With that, Mr. Chairman, I'd like to yield to the sponsor of the bill, Senator Sessions, to explain why this is important.
Senator Sessions.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I will tell you that after the years of watching how our judicial system works with kids and all of that, this is the most amazing agreement. And so I'll just ask for your support right off. I'll tell you how the perception is that this would work, and then I'll tell you how, why we need it. The structure that is envisioned in visiting with the people that worked with both municipalities and with district and county attorneys, and this is how it would work. The district attorney or the county attorney are the gatekeepers of the judicial system, and I think it's become apparent in trying to keep track of our kids that we need a point of entry. And I will say this, my district attorney, who handles a lot of cases, the question was posed to him, will this be more work for you? He answered yes, but he said, we have too many kids that are falling through the cracks. He says, I'm willing to do the work, and so is my office. So I will tell you that. This legislation, what it does, it sets the district attorney or the county attorney up as only the point man to work with all the courts and interested persons to develop the one entry system for kids, our kids. And this is the structure of how it's going to work. And I want you to picture, as I go through this, I want you to picture a great big sieve. And you dump sand or you dump kids into this sieve. Most of them will go right through it, right back to the charging court for them to handle without the assessment, without anything else. But there's going to be two or three larger pieces of rock that stay within that sieve And those are the kids that we're trying to get to, that need district attorneys, county attorneys, and the juvenile courts to look at them. So this is how it would work. And there will be variations on this in the different districts as we have now do things differently, but basically this will how it work. A kid is cited by a police officer into municipal court, and I have to tell you, from everything that we know, this is usually a juvenile's first entry into the world of courts and police officers is in the municipal court. The citation stays just exactly as it is entered now. The only difference is the citation is sent to the district or the county attorney. It can be done with email or it can be done with faxes. Now it's pretty easy from the various parts of a district to do this. Then the district or the county attorney will set up a process to go through the citations every day or as often as needed. In the smaller communities with fewer citations, the district or county attorney may not need to do this every day. There are several models on how to do this process already in place. A core of individuals or one designated person can do the examination. Natrona County's district attorney looks at all the citations. And in Fremont County, a youth service officer collects the citations and does the same thing. A system for recording the citations will be set up, and then most citations will be sent right back to the charging court. When the group or individual at the district court or county level looks at the citations and sees a kid who is starting to be a problem, the district or county attorney can take a closer look at the juvenile, and then, if needed, can pull the kid into juvenile court for assessment and for all the other processes that are now set up within our juvenile court statutes. And now, and this was one of the things that took me a while to learn while I over the years as I looked at this. Our juvenile courts are part of our district courts. The same process then will be used for circuit court. Nothing changes in the lower courts other than sending the citation or a copy of it into the district or the county attorney. The real upside of this process is that all kids with the possibility of entering Wyoming's court system will be noticed. I know that we cannot save everyone, but all the research in other states, and I have it here, have committed themselves to devising a system of assessment and diversionary programs and are cutting the numbers of their young people that are going into detention centers. Hopefully, this process will dovetail in with the community juvenile services boards that we created last year. To further facilitate communication with all the entities dealing with our juveniles that are first entering the judicial system. The result of the procedures designed in this legislation combined with the community service boards will help kids get the help they need earlier, and in all the research I've done, it will reduce placements in detention centers and eventually jails. And I'll just take a few minutes and tell you when I first recognized what happens to kids, can happen to kids in our, with the way our structure of our three courts. We are the only state in the U.S. that does not have special juvenile courts that are separate from our district court with specially trained juvenile justices. And so our kids are charged in all three courts. Quite a few years ago, I had an AA group within my junior high, and I hate to say this about my junior high, but we have a good share of juveniles that are caught in the system. And my AA group was advisee grouped, to make that clear. And you do all kinds of things, but to get to it, sometimes you have periods where you just kind of let kids visit. I started to listen to one day, and it still sticks in my mind, the first day I recognized what was happening, the discussion of kids that were in all three courts. They had families in all three courts. And they knew, it was amazing, they knew how to kind of game the system, how they were going to do this and they were going to do that. And I was astounded. I said, what do you mean? How can you possibly be in three courts at one time? So I was blessed with a lesson on how this occurs. And so over the years, I saw lots of kids come out of detention centers, go back to detention centers, try to come into our schools. And we've made a lot of progress. People, I have to tell you, we've got lots of people out in our state. Our police officers, our judges, our attorneys, they all know that we need to do better. And I will tell you that I think this agreement that was agreed upon during 2 days of discussion with municipalities and with the people that are in charge of our judicial, the first people that see people going into it, our county attorneys and our district attorneys. I think that agreement shows us how concerned people are about our kids and what they see as one more mechanism, one more tiny step that maybe we can stop, we can get to a kid before he gets himself caught up into a system and things happen and spiral out of control, and he can't get out of it then. And I have a thing here that says, state ranks number 2 in U.S. for youth in custody. This is 2008. Wyoming has the nation's second highest rate of children in custody, and nearly 3/4 of those young people are being held for non-violent offenses, according to the figures released today, and that was Kids Counts in 2008. I have here all of the research that shows what other states have done, the percentages of what they're doing that are reducing the detention, the placing in detention centers and in our jails. So, as again, after all the years of watching this and looking at it and trying to bring, I guess, something to fruition that will help our kids, my perception of this is one of the most important things we can do to try to get to our kids early. And so with that, I will ask for your support, and I will answer questions if you have any.
Senator Dockstader.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I commend the sponsor. No doubt she has worked a long time on this, bringing it to pass, and maybe this is the compromise, and there was probably a lot of discussion, but I'd like to hear, as it was all brought together, did you feel like the rural areas were represented well? I heard some large names in there by Wyoming standards, Casper and so forth, but what about the rural areas? Have we got those adequate community juvenile boards? Are they ready to make this program work?
County attorney, I think in Carbon County in one of the districts, and he said, you know, he said, I really agree with this, because he said, what I see is, I said, just around the fringes, I see there'll be a kid in Hanna or in somewhere else, and we know there are things going on, but he said, if things would come into my office, he said, I could look at it. And in our rural areas, all it means is that your county attorney will get copies of those citations, and he can look at them, and when there shows up a problem, and this was one of the things that we tried to solve before. You don't assess every kid. You don't want to assess every kid that shows up. But what you want to do is you want a tracking system that however you do it, with a piece of paper in a filing cabinet or on your, you know, on your computer, or however you do it, you have that, and when that shows up, then you go for it. You see what you can do for that kid before he goes up further or gets caught in that system and then ends up really screwing up his life. And I worked with the municipalities and put the word out with those people, and I don't know. I think everybody's in agreement to try to get together and work this out, and I will tell you, I've looked at all the, on the Juvenile Services Board, I've looked at all the comments that have come back in, and Mr. Chairman, we really do need a point man. We need a point where, and we need somebody kind of in charge of this that can, even in creating the community juvenile service boards, that, that can call a meeting, that can get people together and to do this, and so, I think our rural communities, I think, fit into this from what, from the word that went out to the county attorneys and the words that went out to the municipalities.
Senator Scott.
On that point, one of the people that was helped work the agreement out was somebody with considerable practical experience in the rural areas. And the testimony we had in committee was that this not only would work in the rural areas, but it, simply because they're smaller, it would be easier for them to make it work because they knew more of the people and knew more of the kids involved. And it would actually probably work a little easier in the rural areas. Ms. Chairman, while I'm on my feet, also we had the testimony in committee that this was quite close to the informal, it's a formal version of the informal system Natrona County has had. And we had the director of the Department of Family Services there who said that that really was working quite well, that the practical effect of it was that you were catching and identifying the kids who were getting in real trouble earlier on, where you could intervene with more hope of solving their problems. And he thought that this would make quite a difference all over the state in terms of our ability to identify the kids who need some extra help and get them taken care of. We also had, Mr. Chairman, testimony from the Wyoming Association of Municipalities, potentially concerned here over revenue and source of the fines, and they seem to be perfectly happy with this as well. So I think it's a compromise that's got pretty wide support based on what we heard in committee.
President Hines.
Mr. Chairman, I have a question or a clarification I need, that the bill refers several places to district attorneys. And to my knowledge, we only have two district attorneys in the state. Does this term then include county attorneys? Or, okay, for clarification was what I needed.
Senator Sessions.
The very same question, and I was told that in other parts of the statute that district attorney also refers to county attorney. And I said, well, if there's a question, I will gladly say bring county attorneys into it, but the lawyers didn't seem to think that was a problem. But in closing, Mr. Chairman, I did, out of all the research that I have stacked up, I did bring one thing out to you, and I think this stresses the most of anything of why, if we can get to kids early and we go about it as a concentrated effort amongst all entities in our state, why we can do a lot better and, in essence, to me, save a lot of kids.
Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. A couple of questions, and this kind of goes back to the, I guess it was a Title 14 task force of a few years ago, and multiple disciplinary teams have a little discussion about how that would work in this. And what I recall on that task force, that there was a reluctance to include law enforcement at that time, that they wanted to assess every child that got in the system, so every child did have an assessment as to, you know, the potential of, you know, whatever the child needed at that point in time. And I'm wondering how that dovetails with the old Title 14 stuff and where this is going. And the third thing is, I'm a little concerned about, I guess, basically the county attorneys, whether or not all of them are capable of doing this. Because you've got a wide variety as far as the ability of county's attorneys to perform the duties that they have now and whether or not they can do this.
Senator Ross.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Attempt to answer the good senator from Goshen County question. Remember, folks, that what we got is basically three courts. You got your municipal court, you have your circuit courts, and then in district court we have what is called juvenile court, Title 14 courts. And the juvenile courts are administered already by the district attorney's offices or the county attorney's offices, and that's where you find your MDTs. And in juvenile court, you're dealing with chins, you're dealing with delinquency cases, and then, of course, abuse and neglect cases. But primarily what you would be thinking about in juvenile court in this realm is delinquency cases. So what does this really do? What are we doing here? You know that last year we created juvenile advisory boards to help define in the locales a system, a comprehensive system of diversion or graduated treatment levels and ultimately potentially jail time or whatever, depending on the gravity of the offenses. What this bill does is basically say, okay, we have those boards, we're trying to define the continuum of services, but there's one person that's going to screen this, and this will be your county attorney or your district attorney. All charges will go, filter through them, and it'll go back out to your court, depending on the nature of the offense and repeat offense, number of repeat offenses, all kinds of that kind of thing. So that, in essence, all you're doing is we're just having one place where it's going to screen them and say, you know, Tony Ross's kid has been in municipal court five times, and they just and you know they don't seem to be getting enough treatment or care or whatever. We can put them in juvenile court, or perhaps there is a greater length of sentence or other options available in circuit court, and that's how they'll funnel that. But it doesn't affect MDTs. Those are in, you know, you're dealing generally when you're getting into those kinds of cases, you're dealing with kids that have been in the system probably a number of times already and now make their way into juvenile court. The hope of this is that you'll stop that, or that we'll catch them early enough so that we don't have to have all of these MDTs and all of these other care and treatments, because we got the message to them and caught them before they fell through the cracks. I think, you know, at first blush, I was wondering how it would dovetail with our juvenile advisory boards, but on second thought and having thought through this, I think it is appropriate. This is that, you know, we're all looking for that single point of entry. We all recognize that Wyoming is very diverse. Our municipalities, some of them have developed very good systems, so we don't want to necessarily ruin them. In Natrona County, they've been screening this for quite some time. All charges come through and are looked at by the district attorney's office and then filtered out. So I think we already have a model out of Natrona that is working. All the other districts seem to be, judicial districts seem to be in line with this. I think this may just be one way where we can keep a better track of who's in our system and who's not.
Senator Bebout.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a question I want to be sure I understand. The original bill had a definition for the status offenders, and of course it talked about MIP, and I think you've clarified that, but I want to be sure that the MIP, if that occurs to a juvenile, will that go through the district attorney or will that not go through the district attorney or county attorney?
Senator Sessions.
The charge of minor in possession will still, it'll be part of the citations that go up to district court. And the first time, second time, it'll go back. And this is the big argument. I mean, this was my big argument, I guess, that I had in there that nobody can agree upon, was if you change minor in possession to a juvenile offense, then you can't throw them in jail, as it states in our statutes now. And it seemed that our counties still wanted to have that hammer on a kid. Minor in possession, you can still throw them in jail. The only thing that this will change is that citation will go up to the district attorney's office. And then it will go back, and first or second time, whatever, the municipal court he's picked up in, or they'll deal with it on that level. But let's say we had one time in judiciary when we were discussing the minor in possession, we had a police officer say, well, I had this kid come in for the 14th time in a municipality and I'm going to put him in jail. Well, Mr. Chairman, I submit to you, if you have a kid with 14 minor in possessions, way back down the line, somebody should have gotten hold of that kid way before that. But this does not change anything other than it's a tracking system to try to keep those, get a hold of those kids earlier. And Mr. Chairman, I will tell the fine senator from Fremont County that his county, if he wants to go visit it, they do a wonderful job of screening their kids, that their juveniles that get first entry into the system, and how they handle it. I guess I hold them up as the model if he wants to visit them. Thank you.
Senator Scott.
In further answer to that, the if you look in the bill on page 2, the substitute bill, page 2, line 1, district attorney shall serve a single point of entry for all minors alleged to have committed a crime. So, yes, your MIP, all the crimes, would come to the district attorney, and then they would filter them and see which court's appropriate for them. We did not get into the whole issue of status offenses and that sort of thing. That was part of the bill that apparently was going to be quite contentious, so it got dropped out.
Any further discussion? The question has been called for. All those in favor of Senator Scott's motion to adopt the standing committee amendment number 1 to Senate file 140, I believe it is, 129, excuse me, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? Motion carries. Now we're back on the bill. Question has been called for. The motion to adopt, are you ready for, are all those in favor of Senator Scott's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report that it do so with a favorable recommendation of Senate file 129, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? The motion is carried. Second bill for our reading is 140, Senate file 140.
Senate file 140, sponsored by Senator Flatern. Drug court funding, an act relating to the courts. It was referred to Committee Number 3, Revenue. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Case, Larson, Martin, Perkins, and Schiffer. Senator Schiffer, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure? Senator Schiffer.
Chairman, I move in the Committee of the Whole rise and report it do so with a favorable recommendation on Senate file 140, and I yield for an explanation of the bill to the sponsor, Senator Van Flatern.
Senator Van Flatern.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senate file 140, drug court funding. It makes a couple of corrections to the present drug court statutes, and it shows it on page 2 of the bill, where it removes the amount not to exceed $200,000 for each fiscal year per court. And then it repeats that again on lines 9 and 10 of page 2. And then the other change it makes is when you go to page 2 on line 18, 19, and 20, it deletes that. It doesn't say that they're not supposed to apply for federal grants. What it says is that they don't have to be restricted on lines 19 and 20 to United States Department of Justice drug court program under the guidelines of that particular title, because a lot of times that isn't funded, but other grants are available for them. The way it has been written, they really are restricted to it, just applying under that title. So the bill does two things. Takes off $200,000 cap per court per year and removes that requirement of that particular title of the federal grant program and allows them to apply for other grants. When the original cap was put on 7, 8, 9, 10 years ago, There was $200,000 when there was only $1.5 million total allocation for the program. Half of that is tobacco money, and half of it is general fund money approximately. It is now a $9 million program. There was only a couple of courts back when they started this. There's now 23 different courts that range from municipal court to district court, juvenile court versus adult drug court, which is now called drug court-supervised treatment programs. That was the bill that left the Senate a week ago. Should that bill pass through, this actually becomes a moot point. There is no restriction on the cap on that particular bill, and that revamps all the statutes to do with drug courts. In 2007, in the 8th biennium, we actually removed this cap. It was meant to be put back in as a budget footnote in 9 and 10 that we're in now, and it never was. So for 7 and 8, there was about three courts that got a little over $200,000 each because they had that many more clients. They are now restricted back to the under 200 for this year. By removing this permanently, they'll be able to take on the number of clients. They're also going into the number of clients that are actually there. They're also going into a funding formula now, which is about $9,400 per client. So they are restricted to about 20, 21 clients per drug court. There's a 25% match locally. That does not change. And this money that we're giving them is about 75% of the cost of taking care of a client. So the 25% match doesn't change. All we're doing is taking off the amount that can be allocated by the drug court panel. There's a panel that takes in all the applications. The drug courts themselves actually put down the number of clients they have served and what they expect to serve, and then the money's doled out on that formula. And then, of course, the money, if it's available over the, well, they try to match all the requests. If the money's not available, they cut it down accordingly. So there's, and it's about $11,000 for a juvenile in drug court. So you still keep the match, you just remove the $200,000, and you remove the fact that they can apply for all federal grants, not under that particular title. So I ask for your favorable vote on Senate File 140.
Discussion. Senator Larson.
Mr. Chairman, I did vote for the bill in committee and will continue to do so. I did have a concern that if you remove the $200,000 cap, the reason there's money still left is because probably the testimony indicated that the $200,000 cap was there. Therefore, if anybody wants to do a new drug court or other counties perhaps who have not reached their maximum, want to have more clients or whatever, that there might not be any money left. Now, as was pointed out, if the other bill passes, this isn't going to matter. If it doesn't, this would probably mean that those with a higher caseload would have used up by having more clients and not having a $200,000 limit, would eat up all the money, and you wouldn't have residual monies there in order to, if you would, spread the wealth or spread the ability to take care of the kids and those counties who don't have the courts now may wish to do so. There wouldn't be any money. Now, I'm going to continue to vote for it because I think the other bill is going through. But I think that is a concern that we may have to revisit if the other bill does not go through in order that we get a fair disbursement of those funds. And if the $200,000 cap is removed, that could become a problem. And I think it was only fair to point that out. I will vote for it, ask you to support it.
Further discussion. Further discussion. Question has been called for. All those in favor of Senator Schiffer's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report that it does so with a favorable recommendation for Senate File Number 140. All those in favor?
Aye.
And those opposed? Senate File 140 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for your consideration is Senate File 143.
Senate File Number 143, sponsored by Senator Von Flatern, Marking Structures That Obstruct Flight, an Act Relating to Safety.
It was referred to Committee Number 8, Transportation, Highways, and Military Affairs. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Dockstader, Escobel, Geis, Landon, Von Fladern, Senator Von Fladern, Chairman.
Senator Von Flader.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. When the Committee of the Whole rises to report, I ask that they do so with a favorable recommendation of Senate File 143, and to explain the bill will be the sponsor, and that will be me.
Senator.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You've seen enough of me today, and I hope this is my last time that I have to stand. I will tell you on your desk there is a picture of a tower. And that's what this bill goes to, is marking structures that obstruct flights. And next to that, they should also have a picture showing out the window of an airplane. This is one of our Game and Fish, USDA, actually, airplanes doing wildlife survey. And I'm not sure if it was coyote hunting or counting birds or counting elk or what they were doing at the moment. But within that one picture, you will see, you can't see, actually, you can almost see. If you know where to look, there's a tower. One of these towers, just like you see in this picture, it's a third of a mile away, roughly 1,800 feet, and it is just, if you go to the top of the little blue label on the strut that you see, and you go straight down from there, you'll see a little shadow. I mean, it's not that great in this reproduction. Here's the original photo given to me, and I can sort of see it, but it's really not. I couldn't make enough copies of this to get it out to show you, but you really can't even see it. So what you have is the wind energy business. Wind farms are coming up. They're going all over the state. Well, prior to that, they put out these MET towers, meteorological towers, and that measures and that tests the wind at different angles, different heights on this ridge, in this valley, wherever, so they can pick the optimum spot to put the wind farm. Well, that makes sense, and that's what they need to do. But unfortunately, these towers can go to 60 meters or just under 200 feet. They fall out of everybody else's regulations because they're not in a city, even a city planning or municipal boundaries. They're out in the country. They have no obligation to mark them. They have no obligation to tell us where they are. They definitely don't have to light them, although we would say that there's probably no power there at the time. They could probably put some kind of solar light on. But the bill doesn't even ask for that. What the bill says, and if you read it, it goes to, on page 1, little a, under 10.4.305, it says that all structures located out of the exterior boundaries of any incorporated city, town, or recording subdivision whose appearance is not otherwise mandated by state or federal law. So one of these towers within the flight path of an airport would already have regulations on it. It would have to be marked in some manner. Within the city limits, it would have to be marked. So we're saying it doesn't have to be exactly done in any one particular manner the way you mark it. It can be lighted, can be marked, painted, flagged, or otherwise constructed to be recognizable in clear air during daylight hours from a distance of not less than 2,000 feet. The one in your picture is under 2,000 feet. And I'm not sure that I would have not have seen it. If I was particularly looking for that tower, I would have probably seen it. This plane is traveling about 60 to 100 miles an hour, depending on what he's doing. At that length of time, or at that speed, at 80 miles an hour, you're roughly about 822 seconds from impact. If you recognized it right at 2,000 feet. So if you stuttered for a second, you've already gained several hundred feet before you saw it. You're down to 12, 18 seconds to avoid it. So all we're asking, and the parameters are here for the towers, if it's 50, all the following, 50 feet in height, if it's greater than 50 feet in height above, associated with development or study of wind-powered electric generation, we had issues about having drilling rigs or workover rigs in the oil field be affected by this, and we said, okay, it'll be just wind power, energy, towers, MET towers, and was erected, raised after being lowered, purchased or leased on or after the effective date of this act. We're not asking them to go back and retroactive. Mark them. We're asking them to go back and tell us where they all are through latitude and longitudinal coordinates. Anybody flies with GPS these days, well, 99% of us do, especially Game and Fish, because they lay out grids. If you have coordinates, you can go on the website that DOT is going to host, And you can get those coordinates that match the coordinates you're going to be flying in. You can punch them into your GPS. Put your GPS in your airplane, or if it's a panel mount, you can sit there in your GPS in the plane, put them in, and it'll actually mark them on your GPS. You're flying along, you'll see a mark. If you got ground proximity warning system on your GPS, it'll actually start flashing as you come in, whatever parameter. If you said within 5 miles, I want things to flash if they're taller than I am or within 500 feet of my airplane below me, it'll start flashing. So you can punch these coordinates in. You can actually print out a map. A lot of these little handhelds, you set them in a cradle, they print out a map and put all the new waypoints you've just put in. So they can put a grid and actually lay the grid out and fly the grid. It'll fly it on the GPS. It'll fly it on their paper map they've just created. You can also just put in the marks of the towers. So it'll show on their map and it'll show on their GPS. That's the biggest single important aspect is the reporting. But from this point forward, enactment of this bill, we're asking them to mark them so they're visible for 2,000 feet. And that's what one section here says that you will report. And the next section says within 5 days of, so section B, line 17, page 2, shall report to the Wyoming Department of Transportation the height above the ground, the owner, the method used. What I will point out to you is on page 3, number 6 through 9, within 5 days of receiving data reported under subsection B of this section, the Department of Transportation shall make the data other than the ownership available to the public. What that is saying is that we need to, some of the owners are very nervous. They say people follow us around, we're very successful in what we do, so then they see we have Met Towers on this ridge or that ridge, they think this is the greatest place to put them. Suddenly land values could go up when they're starting to talk about lease agreements on the land. So we say we will report everything else about it and any other information. I'd like, you know whether it's on a ridge or in a valley or it's got guy wires or doesn't have guy wires, but we're not going to give them the ownership. And then it tells on line 11 of page 3, the department shall promulgate rules and regulations necessary to carry out the purpose of this section. So that's the bill. And I will say as a point of order, Mr. Chairman, I did miss amendment number 1, and I'd like that read in so I could formally move that.
Two amendments.
Right.
There's two, yes. This would be standing committee amendment number 1, substitute bill.
Would the reading clerk please read amendment number 1?
Senate File 143, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1. That substitute number 1 be substituted for Senate File 143, and that substitute number 1 do pass.
And, Mr. Chairman, I move Standing Committee Number 1 to substitute number 1. I apologize for the body for getting a little bit ahead of myself, but that would make this bill to be the question on the floor. And I ask your support. There is another standing committee
hold.
You
have
that
right. We need to.
Senator, would you like that one read in right now?
We need to vote on this.
We need to vote on the first one.
The first one. Okay. Any more discussion? Senator Nicholas.
Thank you. Just a question and a concern with respect to the question: why are you limited only to Met Towers that are addressing wind powered electrical generation? If you do a Met Tower for a plant or for a new any type of a facility that emits any type of a stack gas, you'd have to do the same if it's a major piece of facility. Question there. And then second, with respect to my concern, my belief is typically that when anybody regulates the towers, they say you have to have your tower red, blue, blinking lights, and they just make a mandate so that when you're erecting a tower, you know exactly what's required of you. What you've done in this instance is said you can do whatever you want, but you have to ensure, I use the word ensure, you have to demonstrate that it can be visible within 2,000 feet, which to me makes the owner of the Met Tower now the insurer of the safety, so that if he paints it red, puts a light on it, and there is an incident with a collision, a mid-air collision, now the issue is did you, in fact, the precautions you take sufficient enough to make get clearly visible within 2,000 feet? Now I have envisioned a lawsuit where the light wasn't working, where the light was working, but you can't see it 2,000 feet, or folks have pictures just like you shown, except there might be a blinking light. And certainly this creates a standard of care, which creates liability for the people that erect the towers. And I think probably what in the past has happened, you simply say, if you have a tower, put a light on it. It doesn't say that you have a responsibility to make sure it's safe. It simply says you put the light on it, that's good enough. Now what you've done is saying, we don't care what you do, but you are the insurer of it. And if it can't be seen within 2,000 feet, then when there's a collision, the argument is your obligation was to make sure it was clearly visible, and I didn't see it, and I don't think any other pilot would have seen it. Curious how you, whether you address that issue or maybe have no concerns about it.
Senator Von Flader.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We're trying to make this loose enough and ask for compliance. I can see coming back next year if there's issues about noncompliance, reporting in particular. As far as the 2,000 feet, the FAA builds theirs in at a mile visibility, 4,000 some feet, based on airplanes going as much as 400 miles an hour and plus. And once you reach into their stratus where you come under their control, that follows. We did not want to make this so onerous that we had a particular pane, a particular light in the case of having no electricity. I can see a little wind generator being put onto those. I guess that's the intent of them being there to begin with. So a light is a possibility. We were trying to be as open as we could. If we come into hard times, I'm sure we'll keep the attorneys busy with them arguing about whether or not this was the 2,000 feet or 2,001 feet or only 1,999 feet it could be seen from. But we tried to make this as open as possible, not catch things like workover rigs in the oil field, not try to catch silos on coal mines because they're marked anyway. They have other rules and regulations. We really are trying to work with the industry who had great concerns about just having any kind of restraints put on them, and I think this was a very good compromise. Oh, let me address one other. Senator from Laramie, you also asked about other things other than Met Towers. I will say that we're trying to get the temporary, can be thrown up in a day. If they're put in there for at a plant for any kind of sniffing of gases or in there for wind, to measure wind on the day for their own reporting like they at the mines, you have to measure wind for the day for your dust collections and all this. Those are known. Those are permanent, and they're usually around another structure. We're really trying to catch these that are just, there's 250 to 500, and nobody could tell us how many spread around the state. So we're trying to catch these temporary, throw them up in a day, and there's no reporting. No, we're trying to get some reporting and work as well as we can with the industry to at least get the reporting.
Senator Burns.
Mr. Chairman, just to follow up on the senator from Laramie, why wouldn't seem overly burdensome to require some sort of uniformity as far as marking goes, to require a particular color of paint. I don't know why orange is any more onerous than whatever their choice of paint, whether they want to go mauve or something. But if you've got 250 to 500 of these things, and I'm a pilot, I would like to know that if it's this color and the paint has to be at a certain height or something, that I know what that is instead of trying to figure out what that chartreuse thing is out there.
Senator Johnson.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think the good senator from Campbell County has already answered this several times, but I'd like to keep my high comfort level. When I was out campaigning this summer, a lot of people in eastern Laramie County were thinking about a 100-foot private wind generator. The county regulations allow that, and anybody can just go out and put them up. Where do they fit into this? The way it sounds is they don't, but would you please justify my comfort level?
Senator Cooper.
Thank you, Chairman. And I apologize to the sponsor if he's already covered this. I was out of the chambers for a few minutes and may have missed it, but I was just wondering, are there current federal regs that may cover this? And if so, are we actually superseding some of those rules by doing this, or maybe there is not? So that's my question.
Senator Van Flaveren.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. There are no FAA rules or federal rules, and the bill does say if there are. We're not messing with them in the first paragraph, first page, at the bottom there. So, no, there aren't. Under a certain height or the highest point within a certain distance is what the FAA does. So, no, we're not messing with that part of it. To have them all of the same color, once again, we're leaving that up to them. I just want to be able to see it. If I am flying this low and there's not an airport within a couple miles, I'm already in trouble. But a lot of my friends fly this low, count coyotes, prairie chickens, oil field, pipeline patrol. If somebody puts one in a pipeline right away, I think there ought to be a lawsuit about that to begin with. That's flown regularly, and somebody should have been alerted as to that, its appearance. But as far as mandating, I'm hoping that since there's that many and there's only so many manufacturers that there's a standard within the industry, and I don't think we need to dictate it. Nobody in the industry came to us and said, use this color or this light or this height of markings from this many feet up. I just want to know if they can comply with 2,000 feet and you're flying under 100 miles an hour, you should be able to spot it. And if we have reporting and you didn't go to the website and get that data as part of your job, now I'm not covering the ranchers. They hopefully will learn of this site, be told through the aeronautics division, that's why it's within DOT that this site exists, so they can check their own area where their cows are moved to, and may be new to them for the spring or the summer or back for the winter, that somebody's thrown a tower up. They'll be able to go on the website and get the same information, and that's important. But our game and fish is out there every day as well as contractors, and they're the ones that need to be able to spot the towers.
Senator Anderson.
Chairman, I think the sponsor's done a very good job of presenting the position of not only the pilots, but as well as the landowner. But I feel compelled to make a statement in favor of this bill. You know, in my district, we have a number of fairly sizable landowners who fly these small planes. This is an area that's going to see considerable development of wind. They have had the same conversation with me on numerous occasions in regard to their safety. They do fly at these low altitudes to check water, to count sheep or whatever. I know in a couple of instances where children are even flown to school quite often and whatnot. So they fly these small planes. I'm not sure about the instrumentation, but it's I think imperative that they, when these towers go up rapidly, that they have some means of visually spotting them if they're not aware of their location. I think this is a very, very good bill, and I would urge your most favorable consideration.
Senator Perkins.
Thank you. Just a quick question for the sponsor. In here, you've got a requirement to report it, and since we're talking mostly about these, in the subject of discussion has been these temporary met towers, we've got them going into the bat database. We need to have something here about getting them out of the database if they are temporary.
Any further discussion? Senator Von Flaterin.
Mr. Chairman, I did forget to answer the good senator from Laramie County, which is not a seat at the moment. But I will point out that since they're in the county and permitted by the county, they would not fall, and they're not temporary structures. They wouldn't fall under this. He was talking about the personal wind generators at your house. I will say that that's a good point. There must be a way of removing them from the database, so maybe that's a quick amendment on second reading should this move forward. And if there is any other questions, Mr. Chairman, I would ask the committee the whole amendment be read in.
We're on the standing committee number one amendment at this point. So, the question has been called for. All those in favor of Senator Von Flaterin's motion to adopt the standing committee amendment number one, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The amendment has passed. Second amendment. Reading clerk.
Senate file 143. Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1 to Substitute Bill Number 1, page 3, line 9.
Senator Van Flaterin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1 to 143. And what this does, it goes into page 3, line 9, and it just also puts in there what is in our statutes other places, Wyoming Statute 16-4-201 through 205. Once again, the ownership issue, they're worried about the wind companies, wind energy companies were worried about the ownership being out in the public. This just reiterates the fact that data concerning the ownership of a structure shall not be public record under the Wyoming Public Records Act per those statutes. And I ask for your favorable vote on that committee of the whole number one.
Any discussion? Question has been called for. All those in favor of Senator Van Flattering's motion to adopt the committee of the whole number one to Senate file 143, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The amendment is passed. Now we're back to the file. Question has been called for. The motion to adopt, are you ready? All those in favor of Senator Von Flatiron's motion that when the committee of the whole rises to report that it do so with a favorable recommendation on Senate file 143, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Senate file 143 has passed the committee of the whole. The next bill for our consideration. Majority floor leader.
I move that the committee of the whole beg leave to rise and set again.
You have heard the motion. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? It has passed. President Hines.
Reading report, we'll read the committee of the whole report. Or not now, excuse me. Reports from standing committees.
February the 9th, 2009, Mr. President, your committee number one, Judiciary, to whom was referred House Bill 164, engrossed, reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Burns, DeCarrier, Perkins, Ross, and Sessions. Senator Ross, Chairman.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader, that clears the desk.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move that the Senate recess until 2 p.m. this afternoon.
Announcements. Senator Von Flatiron.
Thank you, Mr. President. Hopefully for my last time today. Committee number 8, Transportation, Highway, and Military Affairs will meet 10 minutes after adjournment in S-13 to review House Bill 47, engrossed commercial signage on highways, House Bill 51, engrossed handicapped motorcycle plates, House Bill 113, engrossed careless driving, House Bill 83, engrossed governmental immunity public transportation. And, Mr. President, just a reminder that the Wyoming's Women's Foundation lunch will be at lunch recess for us at Little America.
Senator Larson.
Thank you, Mr. President. Your committee number 9, Minerals, will meet at 12:30 in Room S-18 to discuss House Bill 156, Engrossed Energy Performance Contracting 2, House Bill 251, Trust Retirement Fund Accounting, and House Bill 71, Film Industry Incentives.
Senator Burns.
President, your committee number 6, Travel, Recreation, Wildlife, and Cultural Resources, will meet tomorrow at 20 minutes after the noon recess begins up in S-14, where we will take up House Bill 6, Engrossed Game and Fish Trapping, House Bill 48, Engrossed Game Bird Farms Raising Sage-Grouse, and House Bill 225, Engrossed Bighorn Sheep, Ewe, and Lamb Licenses.
You've heard them. Motion that the Senate shall stand recess until 2 p.m. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Motion passed. We are recessed.